Mr. Musso, Mr. Musso, I believe I saw you doing some striking of questions, so that sounds like you've been efficient in your short break. So in any case, I'll turn back to you to continue with the questioning.
Either that or incredibly inefficient in my preparation, sir, but either way, we're going to save some time. Dr. Rowland, if I'm going to take you back to your presentation, and this is something that you said on page 2216 of the transcript, and you stated, the trails created by this project are also likely to be barriers to the dispersal of flora and fauna, as well as areas for increased predation. And if we are able to view these disturbances from the sky, then there is little doubt that organisms only a few centimeters tall will be affected by them. And I'm wondering if you can maybe expand on those two thoughts and point us to somewhere in the submission where we could maybe find some more empirical evidence to support those statements.
Mr. Musso, it's Olaf Jensen here. I'd be happy to try and answer at least part of the question. With respect to fragmentation, there's a substantial amount of material that we prepared in the Government of Canada submission on fragmentation and effects of linear disturbances, especially on grassland birds. There's also some discussion that could take place, I suppose, relative to western harvest mouse, although that one has not been included in our submission. If you'd like to maybe direct the question, I could help you out. If you're looking for the quantitative effects, I can point you to the right area in the submission and discuss our systematic review of the literature and our meta-analysis with respect to grassland birds and fragmentation.
If you give me 2 seconds. Having consulted with my friend, his question was intended to capture whether there was any studs with respect to studies with respect to any studies with respect to arthropods, and if that's what Dr. Rowland was referring to.
In the presentation, I was partly referring to those, and no, we did not reference any arthropod studies that I remember within our submission. The point was that I was talking about smaller sized organisms. So if you're looking at mice, you're looking at snakes, you're looking at like the harvest mouse, things like that, just smaller organisms that to us, you know, the width of the tire track might not be so big, but it's all about scale. And to a smaller organism, it would be. Just as a follow-up to your last point, the only thing that I could find quickly is in our submission on page 40 through 45, we do talk a little bit about that.
Were you going to expand on this, or you were just giving us a reference point? And the latter's fine.
I was just giving you a reference point because we seem to have already moved on.
Okay. Fortunately, we're going to page 44 of your submission, so.
Mr. Musso, if I might, the point that was just covered, could you define that for me, please? I didn't follow along what you were asking for. Was this the question of predation?
No, it was with respect to fragmentation and specifically with respect to arthropods.
Okay, thank you, sir.
And if we could go to the top photograph, actually. Now, understand, Dr. Rowland, that this photograph was taken in, or you've testified that it was taken in 1997, and the following photograph was taken in 2001. Now, if we stay on the top photograph, it appears as though there's several small wetlands, and specifically it looks like there's a wetland close to the left boundary or the outside boundary. Is that fair? Can you determine that from that photo?
Brent Smith, I can confirm that, yes.
Okay, and if we go down to the second one, it appears as though there's a well there.
It's actually a dugout, sir.
It's a dugout?
Yes.
That's useful. Thank you, sir. I have a couple questions with respect to offsets. And in one of the responses to the panel information request, INCANA stated that assessing and managing regional cumulative effects was a regional planning exercise conducted with other stakeholders. And I'm just wondering, I think you probably already answered this. In Canada's view, what other stakeholders or land users might participate in discussion to implement offsets for the NWA?
Can we just get a point of clarification for offsets? Are you talking about the idea of source sink populations?
We're talking compensation or offsets. So in other words, if some part of the ecosystem is taken up by this project, is there another place where that can be made up?
Sorry, sir, there's two, as I understand your question, there's two quite distinct elements to it, and I want to make sure we don't go off down the wrong path. As I heard it, the first portion of the question was with regard to what the identity of potential regional stakeholders might be to participate in some form of a regional cumulative effects-oriented study. But the second portion of your question referenced the specific concept of offsets. I want to test which one of those, or perhaps both, was the main thrust of your question.
The, the offsets was the thrust of the question. I think we've already established that Environment Canada and D&D and other groups from Canada would be interested in being involved in multi-stakeholder groups. But with respect to offsets, we wanted to know, first of all, what other stakeholders might participate in discussions on that, and then we'll get to the offsets themselves.
Recognizing, of course, we're in your hands as to the questions, it's to us the logical sequence there would actually flow the other way around. The question of offsets is a much bigger question than the latter part.
That's question number two. So however you want to address them, sir.
On the question of offsets, we certainly haven't at Environment Canada considered that as an option in terms of this particular project. We haven't had a lot of discussion on it. It wouldn't be our preference to pursue an offset option in this case. The National Wildlife Area is intact, and when you look at the landscape around the National Wildlife Area and in the region, I mean, this is a highly fragmented landscape, and we think right now, I mean, the area itself is offsetting a lot of things that are happening around it already. So at this point, we really wouldn't advocate that option in terms of this project. Is that what you were?
Sir, I think that answers both questions. My next question relates to the management plan for the North National Wildlife Area, and I think what I gathered from the evidence we've heard over the last couple of days that really the management plan is a compendium of a number of different documents, and I've heard that includes the management strategy, the RTAMs, it includes the RSOs. I think it was chapters 5 to 7. I'm not certain if it will include the Suffield Sustainability Management Plan, but I take it there's a number of documents you would need to refer to get the big picture for the NWA. Is that fair?
I'll take a first crack at that one, but then I'll ask for the base staff to jump in as I either misstep or forget to put in information. If you look at it in a hierarchical manner, the strategy certainly is guiding how the entire NWA needs to be handled. But then you work down to it, and there's going to be the Suffield Sustainable Management Plan, which is addressing a number of ideas that need to be in there, studies, etc. And that was discussed just a short while ago. After that, there are a number of tools available for the base commander and his staff to make sure that they handle everything and anything that goes on within the base. Important in all this is the RTAM system. And the RTAMs itself looks and allocates, and you have the slide that I think has just popped up in front of you, all of the things that are going to be part of that base and all activities that need to be governed, coordinated, and managed. Within that system, of course, there are some regulatory documents such as base standing orders, range standing orders, and any and all directives that may apply to how the training or the protocols are for either training, industrial activities, research activities. So really, I think the base commander with his staff have a system by which many stakeholders' needs are addressed properly. At the same time, of course, this makes sure that it respects applicable laws and sound environmental procedures, sound training procedures. So I think it's actually a fairly good system. But this serves as really the plan to look after the entire base. And that includes, of course, the National Wildlife Area. Is that good?
It was instructive.
All right.
And maybe I can follow up with Environment Canada then. I'm not going to say it seems to be a complicated management strategy, but do other NWAs have as many variables in their management plans?
I think the nature of the question, and I don't want to rephrase it, but do we have this sort of complex land use on our other national wildlife areas? Is that?
That's a pretty good question. So,
okay, I'll go there.
Why don't we start with that?
Well, I like that one. I'm a little more familiar with that than I am what's in the actual management plans of every national wildlife area in Canada.
We'll come back to that, but okay. Let's start with the.
We have, I'll give you an example maybe in terms of some of the ranges of activities that we have on our national wildlife areas across the country. We have some very large areas in northern Canada, and we're in the process of actually trying to create new ones in the Mackenzie Valley area, you know, that are fairly large expanses that are relatively untouched, you know, and there's some research activities going on. In there, we have some exploration activities in the north as well. In areas similar to this ecosystem in the prairies, our first national wildlife area is at Last Mountain Lake. That's halfway between Regina and Saskatoon. We do have multiple uses there. We have some, you know, we manage a grassland there, if you will. There's some haying that goes on there. We have cooperative grazing projects with PFRA who are involved there with our ultimate goal of restoring the native prairie in that one. So that gives you an idea of what we're doing there. If you go further elsewhere across the country, we do have areas that we have education, you know, components to the area. So it's quite variable as you go across the country. Ultimately, the commonality is that we maintain all these areas for the conservation of wildlife, and that's, I guess that's the consistency across the country.
One other comment to make, it's Mr. Jensen here. One of my responsibilities at Environment Canada is I'm responsible for the protected areas in the province of Alberta, and I participate in the National Protected Areas Program. So to get to your question of is it unusual to have this number of documents comprise a single management plan for a protected area, it is unusual in the context of protected areas within the Environment Canada protected areas system, but the Suffield National Wildlife Area is an unusual protected area, and it's got a fair bit of people involved in it. The background document we use for creating management plans for national wildlife areas is a practitioner's guide. It's our understanding at present time that D&D participates in the protected areas working group and works with our practitioners and have reviewed the practitioner's guide like all other protected areas practitioners in Canada, that the documents that comprise the D&D management strategy, RTAMs and all the other documents that have been discussed, do meet the criteria of being a management plan for the National Wildlife Area. Of course, it doesn't look the same, but it certainly seems to meet the criteria, at least from my perspective, within the Protected Areas Program.
Fernando Martins. One of the underlying things that we have to remember is back how this whole process started. In 1971, the base, when it was formed, recognized this area as being sensitive. And from the outset, the military managed that area within the construct of CFB Suffield. And we continue to do so today. When we were working on the gazetting with Environment Canada, we operated on the premise that we would continue to manage the lands as we had back in 1971 right through, and understanding that there was going to be a new regulatory framework imposed on that chunk of the land, et cetera. So we have tried to incorporate that in through the existing processes, the existing systems, et cetera, that the military has used, et cetera. we have to have a holistic approach because we use the whole training area for military purposes. We use the whole training area for defense research and have for a number of years. And there are a number of other interests that do impact on the whole system. This being said, the Office of the Auditor General has conducted a review of all national wildlife areas, including CFB Suffield National Wildlife Area. While we do not have the final report, but we were given a preliminary report, and it indicated a review of our system in that is actually quite a strong system, and it was actually further ahead than most other NWAs. And I'm not trying to diminish what other NWAs have done or not. The SSMP process, Suffield Sustainable Management Plan process, will be looking at all these components and will give us an overarching plan for the management of CFB Suffield. And if there are going to be any changes necessary as associated to specific parts of the base, i.e. the National Wildlife Area, that will probably want to be one of the things that may fall out of that. Right now, this is the system that we use. We find that it's a very effective system. And to date, there seems to be no better system available to us with all the other activities that we have in place and all the regulatory requirements that we have.
And perhaps if I can just add a couple of things. As commander of one area support group, I have a number of bases that also have training areas. For example, Wainwright is one of my bases. Shiloh is one of my base. Even places like Chilliwack is one of my base. They have training areas per se. So a lot of the regulatory things that you're seeing up there and the processes are duplicated there. They have to look after ranges. They have to contend with live fire. A lot of these places have also other participants on them, for example, grazing. In Wainwright, there's also some oil exploration that goes on. There's about 500 wells there as well. The difference, of course, for Suffield and why we have additional things on there are all the other complexities. British Army training in Canada is a complexity that needs to be addressed and needs to be regulated. The fact that there's a national wildlife area makes it more complex. The research that goes on, it was just alluded to in terms of defense research, which employs and has employed dangerous substances, makes it so this is a very dangerous area in many respects, and it's a very complex area. And that's why when the base commander and his staff have to look after this, they have to have very detailed processes, which at first may seem like there's just too many of them, but in reality, if they did not exist, they would have to be created. And I think that the presence of RSOs, which are very directive in what can happen or cannot happen, the various committees that are established and things like SEAC and SGAC, are all important to make sure that we have good governance of that training area and of that base. So I think that the steps we have up there really give us a sound plan and a sound method by which that base is run and governed, and is therefore available to all of the varied users that we just mentioned there. Thank you.
And I think I understand Canada's answer with respect to the completeness of the plan. I'm wondering if it would be useful to have a single document, whether it's an index or an overview, so that users other than the military could have some clarity of purpose and certainty of process. I'm wondering if you're referring to a number of different documents, would it be useful to develop an overview document that sort of directs you to all these different documents so that at least nothing's missed from, say, an outside regulator or a user like industry or even PFRA could use?
I'll just take one moment for that, please.
Thank you.
believe really the best document for that would actually be the range standing orders. They are a governance for how all those ranges are to be run. It would be a good first point of entry for any user who want to come onto this base for whatever purpose. And on top of that, any other regulations that might be in there are linked to the range standing orders. So certainly it works for visiting Canadian units. When we have, for example, elements from one Canadian Mechanized Brigade Group that come down from Edmonton to go and train, that's where they go to, is to the RSOs. And similarly, the British rely on the RSOs. And there are specific chapters within them. One of them enters evidence here that applies to oil and gas, which again gives a governance for how we do that business on that training area.
Okay, and that's helpful. I intended to talk about the RSOs tomorrow with Colonel Bruce, and I think I will do that, sir. So it's 5:30, and happenstance has it that I'm done. So thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Musso. At least for the moment, anyway. In terms of our plans now, then, as I indicated, we would break for about 45 minutes, come back and hear the evidence from SEAC, and continue with cross-examination of the SEAC panel at that point. Now, the SEAC panel, I understand, consists of two members only, and so we will have to, we'll have a somewhat smaller panel than we currently have on our left at the moment, but I would have to, or at least I would ask the Government of Canada to, I presume, to remove themselves from there, or at least part of that area, so that the two representatives of SEAC could sit there. Does that make sense, Mr. McDougall?
It does, sir. We have our 56 experts that will be providing this evening as well. No, in reality, I think that probably the easiest will just be either two seats here or two seats at the end, such okay. that you know, they can be close to you.
Yep.
And I'll sit here, so we don't need to clear out everything. We just need two seats somewhere in the front row would be adequate.
That would be fine, because we do want to have Colonel Bruce back tomorrow, and I expect, by virtue of the kinds of questions that Mr. Musso and others will have, that we may need to have Colonel Bruce accompanied by most of you again tomorrow, and I'll leave that up to you. But so it might be easier if we could just vacate a small portion and the two members of SEAC could sit down there.
That's perfectly fine, sir. I would ask, Mr. Jensen obviously is the SEAC member and one of the two for this evening, given that he wasn't available for today to go over what we're doing tonight. I'm wondering whether I couldn't have until 6:30 just to make sure that we're ready to go for this evening.
That's fine with me. Okay, no objections.
No objections.
Reconvene at 6:30 then.
Thank you, sir.